Okay, so taps, let's reduce everything. Sound, headphone. That should stop it. Okay, so you probably had to be there to see the humor in these skits, but it got us over the top of the hour. Did that have any humorous effect, or was it just audio noise?
I thought the commercials were the best.
Did we see any?
No, but I can visualize them. The other one was just more so screaming when they kept doing the same thing over and over again, answering the questions before he asked it.
Right. So what commercial? Was there a commercial?
One was Sophie.
Oh, yeah, right. Okay, so that was good. You liked that.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, the video makes it a little funnier, but sorry if you didn't find any entertainment value in there. But I'm happy that they're there. I can occasionally go look at one. And remember my old days in Toronto watching it. But now we're going to go serious. We have to continue to explore Hitler. Have I got everything turned off? That's sound. Yeah, sounds all pretty quiet. So, do you have any thoughts from last week, Bert? Oh, you know that bit about the Jewish description?
Yes.
That might be a problem now, but I don't think it would be a problem back then. The describing of the characteristics of the Jews. The Jews were so put upon back then to talk about them, I don't think was a big deal, like the way he did. But mm-hmm. I'm not sure. What do you think?
No, but I kind of was using my bias of what I know now as far as the Anti-Defamation League, that's what I picked up, that that's maybe why he was blackballed, because of his coverage saying he's a supporter of Israel. Hitler, because, I mean, what you've read so far, I think it's like three chapters or three segments of it. I mean, he's just doing a very good description of the state of Berlin and the whole background. So, and then he did, last week he gave the description of the, describing the Jews at that time. But the way he was, I think he made a reference about the American bias. He made some reference of someone who's from England or America.
Right, let me read that part. I was just looking at that. So it says, when Mussolini was asked what he thought about the National Socialist attitude with regard to the Jewish question, now there was a Jewish question back then. I mean, countries wouldn't even help them get out of Germany. He replied quite sincerely at once, "We have no Jewish question in Italy." That's all. He just says, "We have no Jewish question in Italy." An English leader of the same order would reply exactly the same way. "Never heard of it," he would snap. "No Jewish question in England, my dear sir. What is a Jewish question anyway?" So pointing out the hypocrisy, I guess that's what that is true. It is hypocritical if they did act that way. So then he says, "In America, there is a Jewish question of sorts, no doubt, but not much. The anti-Semitism that does exist is sustained solely by the extremely bad manners and barbaric aggressiveness of the Eastern slum Jew immigrant dumped into America yearly in such great numbers." So he's saying there is bad manners and barbaric aggressiveness in the Eastern slum Jew immigrant. Now, might not get away with that today.
No.
Right?
No,
but this
not
is
at
then.
All.
That is more even, what's he saying? The anti-Semitism that does exist is sustained solely by the extremely bad manners. That is more even than human beings can comfortably bear. But there's a clause. Who are, when not artificially agitated, the most stoical and patient of all the animal creation? So a twinge of anti-Semitism occurs in response. And of course, the good Jew suffers along with the bad. Just as in the past, the intelligent Anglo-Saxon American has suffered because of the bad manners of herds of preposterous Babbitt sightseeing in Europe. So he's talking about the bad element in any group, any race. So that's honest. there is people who would come across that way in the Jewish culture, I guess, back then. The anti-Semitism that does exist is sustained solely by the extremely bad manners and barbaric aggressiveness of the Eastern Slum Jew immigrant dumped into America yearly in such great numbers. That is more even than human beings who are, when not artificially agitated, the most stoical and patient of all the animal creation. That is more than these beings, human beings, can comfortably bear. So a twinge of anti-Semitism occurs in response, and of course the good Jew suffers along with the bad. So I don't see anything wrong with that statement. In order not to jump to conclusions regarding what must seem to the Anglo-Saxon a particularly harsh intolerance, the situation of the Jewish community in Middle Europe, that is in Germany, Austria, Poland, Czechoslovakia, Hungary, Romania, and the Baltic states, must be fully taken into account. In order not to jump to conclusions regarding what must seem to the Anglo-Saxon particularly harsh intolerance. So he's saying that the Anglo-Saxons might think that there is anti-Semitism in Europe, right? The situation must be fully taken into account. Popular prejudice is very powerful still in all those countries. As an agitation's middle, or instrument of political agitation, anti-Semitism is highly effective. It is not only the Hitlerites, every shade of nationalist is in one degree or another anti-Semitic. The enemies of Hitlerism accuse the leaders of that party of making a cynical use of this handy weapon of race antagonism for their own ends. I do not believe that is the case, so far, at all events, as Hitler himself is concerned. So, that could be seen in retrospect as a big mistake to say that. But he's talking about Hitler.
Yeah.
Hitler, didn't he say some bad stuff in the Mein Kampf, which I haven't read? So, he says, one of the principal opponents of Hitlerism, the Austrian Kudenhof Kalergi. I remember LaRouche writing about the Kudenhof Kalergi family as bad oligarchs. Gives some quote about Rathenau, Walter Rathenau, and the assassination, but I don't know what it says. Then he says, this is no doubt true. Whether socialist or monarchist, the German inherits his very powerful prejudice. He identifies the Jew with everything that is inimical to the society to which he belongs, the political and cultural system of the Aryan world. To deal with this situation, anti-Semitic societies have recently been formed. The principal one has offices in Paris. Mr. H.G. Wells is a member of its committee. The young Berlin leader of the National Socialists, Goebbels, wrote as follows, blah, 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 and it's translated. Perhaps he'd like to convince himself one of these days in Berlin, the principal field of the activity of this elite, how their culture in jazz, nigger dances, and similar amusements, which are completely alien to us, expresses itself. So that's not too cool of a statement. So then Lewis says, so it goes on. A battle of ideas with people of Jewish origin always identify with the tendencies that are destructive of the European or Aryan ethos. Now he's describing what's going on. Not necessarily for it or against it. He's describing the anti-Semitism. Right?
What do you think? It's just a thought just popped in is that McLuhan learned from Lewis, what is it, the unjudging observer? What was that reference you always...
the technique of suspended judgment.
Yeah, the technique of suspended judgment. That's all he's doing. He's just describing.
Yep.
I mean, he's not saying there's
not
a history. But, right. And a lot of people probably in reading would take his writing as that he's for it. Maybe that's...
That's right. Because I talk about it, I'm for it. But he's trying to describe, honestly, that there is anti-Semitism and what it is, where it is. America, it's not as tribal as in Europe. It's just based on hygiene or just some ghetto guy that people don't like. So, but in Europe, there is. And they're ready to blame them. Now, McLuhan says that, well, actually it was Elias Canetti said, the radio environment imploded the German people, and all their prejudices came out, and they had to blame someone, so they blamed the nearby stranger tribe, the Jews. So it's caused by radio. I don't know if Lewis ever gets to that point. He probably doesn't in this book. It's too soon. But and Canetti probably gets the credit for it because he wouldn't have written it if Lewis had done it. But McLuhan learned from that. So, but you've got this incredible tribalism going on in Europe, and that's what Lewis is talking about. He says, and so it goes on, a battle of ideas with people of Jewish origin always identified with the tendencies that are destructive of the European or Aryan ethos. And it's perhaps only fair to the National Socialists to say that the Jew has often lent color to these accusations. But the Jew, no doubt, would retort that, coming as he generally does from Tartary, he cannot be expected to be much attracted by carol singing, Protestant hymn music, or the Teutonic royal academicism of official painting. In other words, he's saying the Protestant culture of the Germans is crap. And Lewis agrees with the Jew. And that in any case, he buys and sells, being a man of affairs, novelties that are good business propositions. You see, he generally does from, he cannot be expected to like this German culture, being a man of affairs, novelties that are good business propositions. He might go more deeply, I guess the Jew would respond, he might go more deeply into it than that, of course, and protest that it was not he at all, but the great Aryan inventors and technicians who have been responsible for all the destructive modernism of the present Western world. Western science is to blame, in short. He has made use of this, he could point out with some show of reason, but would of his own accord never have invented it. So the Jew can say the dumb Westerners invented all this bad stuff. Hey? That's what he's saying there. And he says, I will not pursue this argument, but we will suppose that as we turn away, we have heard that National Socialists demanding angrily what suspension bridges, telephones, and elevators in themselves have necessarily to do with jazz and Negro art. So what's he saying? But we will suppose that as we turn away, we have heard the National Socialists demanding angrily what has technology got to do with jazz and Negro art. They don't make the connection, and the Jew makes the connection of the technology and maybe the culture. The Jew knows the medium is the message, sort of. And to give the Jew the last word, we can imagine that we hear him in his turn pointing out, always to some effect, that as to the latter, is it not the Negro in the land of elevators who is employed to operate same? So he's talking about the blacks get to do the elevators. It's difficult to figure out what the hell he's saying. You know, it's complicated. This is the way they talk back then.
Yeah.
We will suppose, as we turn away, we've heard the Nazis say, what has our technology got to do with jazz and Negro art? But then the Jew says, we can imagine that we hear him as, in his turn pointing out, that as the latter, is it not the Negro who is employed to operate the same? So the music of ex-slaves gets mixed up, not unnaturally, after all, with the modernist machinery, employed to whisk cartloads of babbits up and down their megalopolitan steel and concrete towers. But we should immediately hear the National Socialists insisting that this New York civilization was rather Judeo-American than European-American. All the replies, says Lewis, and counter-replies, however, of this fierce dispute we will allow to die away. So he's not going to really get involved with that. He doesn't take it too seriously. But it's interesting, he sees the disputes mixed up with the technologies. You know, That's incipient media ecology on a crude level. He says, an Englishman or an American friendly to Hitler should perhaps say is this. He should say to the Hitlerite that he takes the Jew too seriously. For better or for worse, in the words of the English marriage service, there is the Jew. Feminine and in many ways very unpleasant. All people have their bad sides, yet some modus vivendi has to be found. And as a middleman of uncanny penetration, may he not even have an important civilizing function? Then, of course, this traditional Jewish figure of melodrama or of comedy tends to disappear the farther west it travels. So some could say, well, why don't you talk about the blacks? You know, why are you talking so much about the Jews? But that's because the Jewish issue is a question. Unfortunately, in the middle, in Europe at that point. I mean, they did not, what I've heard and remember is that the Jews were not helped to get out of Europe. There was a heavy streak of anti-Semitism going on. Or heavy characteristic in European culture and maybe in the United States. I know there's a quote by McLuhan. He made a big point of, asking for Canada to allow the Jews to come over. So, maybe what's striking to us is someone going on and on about this in a book.
You know, yes.
This chapter. I don't know what, I don't read the right-wing reviews or the, you know, Henry West guys might say that Fox News is racist, CBS is racist. You know, what's his name? Al Sharpton would do this. I don't follow what they would find there. I mean, I'm not aware of it. Not saying it isn't there, but I guess a lot of people don't like Sharpton for making an issue out of this. So people are uncomfortable now about even talking about racial stereotypes, right? Not even allowed to imply it. So Lewis is discussing racial stereotypes, but not endorsing them, just saying this is what's going on. So I don't see that as a problem back then. I mean, is he supposed to be a saint and totally relevant to the 22nd century? Right?
Yeah.
Isn't that a bit unfair? All these... I mean, you go back, they all had, all the famous writers, intellectuals of the Western canon had odd ideas through history. So we are in a world of no ideas. If you're a cool person, you don't have any ideas. You don't judge anything using the technique of suspended judgment. I don't make an idea about anything. I don't even engage in thought. I am ascended. I'm not involved in the labyrinth of the mind. I don't have any category. It's what Ayn goes on about. We're too embedded in the archetypal cliché grid. So, unfortunately, Wyndham Lewis is doing the archetypal grid too much here from the enlightened Ayanet's point of view. Okay, so where are we at? Anybody got anything to say? Geez, we're down to Bert, Eliza, and the British person, Sean. Those British people, they're scum, aren't they? I've read LaRouche on the British people. I agree with that. McLuhan said when he started arguing with Jonathan Miller, who wrote this book, A Hit Job on McLuhan in 71, there was a big debate between them in The Listener, a famous British newspaper cultural organ. And McLuhan says, there's not one British person who's capable of understanding my media ecology. Condemns the whole country. So... we agree with McLuhan. We don't think any British are capable of understanding visual space and their own bias. You are extremely biased, Sean. You don't even know it. You don't even dare come on and defend yourself, Sean. I don't even know if I'm pronouncing your name. I can't remember. It's J-A-U-N. How's the video going? They're making a video of Iandome. What's happening there? Let's see if she's emailing. You could type in something. Now, what's going on here? I keep forgetting to look over here. Let's see. Well, not too much.
Hi, Bob.
Hi, Sean.
I'm not British.
Oh, well, there. I'm just right there. What are you?
I just.
You're a human being. Yeah, see? The person with the multiple bodies does not have to identify with the chemical body characteristics anymore. That's why we can't even talk about that stuff. The chemical body is so trivial. You don't even have the archetypes anymore. Yeah, that's a good point there, Sean. You're not so dumb as I thought you were. But you are contemporary. That's a contemporary view there. It's rather modern hypnotist saying, I'm a human being. I've even heard Carolyn say, I'm not a woman, I'm a human being. Yeah, well, you're not even a human being anymore. You're a discarnate super angel heading towards the post-human.
Yeah, we want to go beyond that, hey?
That's right. So what's happening with the video? All about me. How's it coming along?
It's got a lovely beginning. Shows a lot how it's to do with DNA and stuff.
Yeah.
We just want to go do a few more shots, like in the woods, get a few nature shots in them and put it all together. And then it should be done. Well, we've got my little three-year-old siren in it, and she complies a lot off air.
That's good. So do you need a budget infusion?
No.
You're okay.
As I said, we're going to do it, and Dr. Karen, look, yes. And everything just fell into place what I needed, so that's nice.
What was that first sentence? You said something about Carolyn?
When we were speaking on air, and Dr. Carolyn Dean said, yes, I've got a blessing to do it.
Right.
Yeah, then everything just fell into place after
that.
Oh,
okay. Good. All right.
Yeah, okay, I want to do it that way. To make, of course, that's the whole thing.
What's your opinion on the Jewish question?
I didn't hear the Jewish question.
We can't even say the phrase. It sounds absurd.
Was it to do with racism?
Yeah. Is there anti-Semitism in England?
I would think so. you've got all the a lot of people that are together on some things, but totally on Facebook you can see how they're just warring. Totally opposite views. And and a lot of this risk assessment, health and safety stuff. So they're all very, well, not all of them. I don't want to be nasty. There's a lot of the robotic mindset going on.
Okay.
Yeah, but there's a lot of people waking up as well, so that's good.
But they're venting. They can't do it in their jobs. They can't be vocal like that, I assume. They get fired. They got to be politically correct, racially correct, but they vent in the chip body.
Yes, but there's even some laws, like if you work in care, for instance, and you go and misbehave on Facebook, have a night out and you're drunk, and that comes out on Facebook, they can sack you, as they call it in England. You've got to comply to their system, and you can't have your social life. That has to come first, and I feel it should be the other way around. Social life.
Right.
You should be able to do what you want to do, and when you work, you're working. When you're at work, but when you're not at work, you're not at work.
Right. So the strict, pure atmosphere in the public sphere, in the media sphere, that would make, you know, people, they would find it hard to read Lewis with their modern bias. You know, that's where, though I've heard that the kids don't care a lot, the younger kids don't care about these kind of issues. They're used to their friends being assholes and temporarily joining a fascist group or a communist group or something. And so the professors who teach Wyndham Lewis find the younger kids not so uptight about the accusations against Lewis, Wyndham Lewis, that he was a Nazi and this and that. So it's all mixed up. Nothing gets resolved today. It's all mixed up in noise, media noise. That's our alibi. Media noise triumphs. Particular points of view can't be even heard. Oh, let me unmute Bert. Anything you want to say, Bert?
My 4 hour 4 hour Skype kicked out, so I didn't hear the last 3 minutes or whatever you were talking.
Sean was saying that you have to be perfect at work, and you go home, get drunk, and go on your Facebook page and start slurring and making insults. You'll get fired. You'll get fired from your job. And Sean's saying they should not link your social life in with your job life. Right, Sean?
I understand the whole meaning behind it, as in you represent something. But it's just that whole bit of where it's system orientated, where the system's needs comes first and then yours.
Yes.
And it should be the other way around.
Well, we're graced with the presence of number one, Chad. You, what, woke up early or something? You're ready to go, Chad?
Yeah, I'm all bright-eyed and bushy-tailed. No, I've been up all night.
You were up all night?
Yeah, I was on the phone.
Not with us.
No, no. Somebody else. I was on the phone.
What were you discussing? You don't have to tell us. But I'm going to ask.
Just history. Personal
were you
history.
Were you on the phone with someone I know?
Yeah.
Yeah. I know who it is.
Yeah.
So, you got a new project looming. Is that to be discussed in any way?
You mean the electrical arc stuff?
Don't say it. You don't have to say it.
I don't have to, but do you want me to?
I don't care. I'm just saying if you want to talk about it, we can talk if you're sure it's going to happen.
I think it's early enough in the process, but no one is really going to know what the fuck it's about.
Oh, okay. You mean you can talk about it without it being specific?
Yeah.
Well, how do we do that?
Well, who was around for that? That was at like 10 o'clock or something, wasn't it? Maybe earlier?
No, we never talked about your project that I know of. Oh, no, I don't.
Oh, you're talking about something else.
I don't mean that other stuff. I'm talking about your project.
Yeah, okay, yeah, we can talk about that. There's no harm in that. I just fucking did a webinar on it on Thursday, so there's nothing private there.
No. I'm talking about what you personally might do.
Is this what I talked to you and Carolyn about the other night?
Yeah, not business. Not business.
Oh, social.
Well, yeah, I mean...
No, social. No, we can't talk about that yet. No.
And I don't think social is the right word. Not even personal. It's public.
I don't know what the fuck you're talking about.
Okay, Chad.
Bob, you're going to have to play charades a little bit different.
Have you got something you want to do soon, and you decide to do it? You personally.
If I got something I want to do soon, I decide whether to do it.
Well, I hooked you up with it. I brought you together.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
I'm not talking about any private thing. I'm not talking about any thing in your social life. I'm talking about your public personality.
Oh, that project. As you can see, people, I have a lot of projects on the go.
Yeah.
That's what happens when you, the more you interact with Bob, you end up with a lot of projects. So, yeah, Bob, I would actually like to bring that up and just see what kind of feedback, because...
Yeah.
Yeah. So what Bob is referring to is I might have my own show on this network in the next couple of weeks or so, 2 weeks to a month. And I don't know. I haven't actually stopped to think about, like, what segment of the Ionic community I'm actually reaching out to. I haven't put a name on it, but maybe Bob could lend some advice in that department.
Yeah, I was wondering, what expertise or what would you like to, what are we missing? We got Karen's show, Ginny's show, my show, and that's it. Is there something you feel that you could fill in, information-wise, or something?
Okay, so... You got What Youth, which is kind of, I don't know if my demographic has to do with age. I think it has to do with interest. But anyway, What Youth is like the younger, and then you've got Any Show, which is seems to be more around the Gagas, right?
Yeah.
That's where they do a lot of their stuff. And then Carolyn's show is very health-oriented, and then Payday is... the whole fucking Monty. So
yeah,
I was thinking of focusing on some of the more, you know how I get into the more technical stuff with Ion?
Right.
Maybe getting a little bit deeper technically maybe trying to attract some of the people that are kind of in my business world.
Yeah.
Or, like, trying to get them off the sort of fallen Web 2.0 world and over the Ionic post-Web 2.0 world.
Right.
Yeah.
That sounds good. So basically a nerdy, techie, modern digital world, technology, business. The Canadian mentality you don't like in that business.
I wouldn't even call it Canadian. It's more like Silicon Valley.
Right.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
Yeah, to bring those people in, because I don't know if there's any other, like, on-ramp for them to get into this. And they're
right.
Challenging because a lot of them are very empirical and scientific and really tough
yeah.
Not to crack, because if they don't see the science behind it, then they're kind of gone. But you never know.
I call them
the margins.
Yeah, Craig. I call them, they don't know it, they would win in any argument with me, but I perceive them as neurotically literal people with the modern, they're gadget lovers. And they'll go with the technical knowledge, and they wouldn't even be, it seems, they wouldn't even be interested in what Ion's challenging them with. You know, like we did on the show today. Oh, lots of new biological information, or chemical or physics stuff. Bill's our sample, he finds it quite chaotic what Ion says, sometimes sort of right, but not detailed enough. He doesn't like it, basically. I think that attitude is a disservice of being a technical machine gadget lover guy. You know, you actually get embedded in your present day technology. You have to do it. You can't be, you know, a flake and fly a plane or repair a plane, but that could be, you know, what you're tackling is the biggest disservice. The technocrats, the ones proud of their machine intelligence. They're the worst pagans in terms of identifying with the technology, with the world around them, and embedded in it, and proud of being practical, proud of not going into worrying about life after death, or getting things done. It seems from my end that is the worst attitude. And that would be a worthy thing to try to present in their way. Hey, wait a minute, look at this. You know?
Yeah, and the thing is, there seems to be a bit of a life cycle for them that is consistent across that group of people, and it's that they go hard into the corporate world of technology, startups, and things like that, and then as they get more up the ladder and they realize it's completely unfulfilling, then they end up breaking down, and they do kind of the cycle I did, and they just quit their job and leave. Traveling.
Right.
And then, so you've got that first phase, and then the second phase is when they go traveling, they engage in what they call lifestyle design. So that's
lifestyle what?
Lifestyle design.
Yeah.
Like they design their own lifestyle because they were corporate slaves, and now they'll do things like move to the Philippines where the cost of living is like way lower than it is in North America or Europe. You know,
yeah.
They can live for under $1,600 a month, all expenses, and they can work from there on their computer any time of the day they want. And a lot of them get into, like, publishing e-books and videos and things like that, just sort of content. So they leave the heavy-duty world of high technology, corporate, and then they go over to more sort of a lightweight. Their goal isn't to build a big company, it's just to build an income so they can go to the beach. So they become, like, professional slackers, I guess, in a way. And then after that, they've read all the Tim Ferriss books about how to, you know, the 4-hour work week, the 4-hour body, the 4-hour diet, and they're walking in the footsteps of Tim Ferriss, and then they get to the point where this is great and everything, but it's not fulfilling me spiritually. So that's when they'll come to Ion. That's when they'll be more open to it.
Right.
Not in the early two phases of the life cycle, it's in the third phase. In the first phase, they're completely just fucking myopic in their corporate world. The second phase, they're doing the Tim Ferriss lifestyle design thing, and he has all the books to follow for that. He's like the Carlos Castaneda of the technocrat world.
Okay.
And then once they get out of that and they realize that that's not getting them off anymore, then then they're looking for spiritual options. They can go be Buddhist, or they can convert to Islam or Judaism, or they can look at ION.
Hmm. Tim Ferriss, he did a couple of science books, didn't he?
I think that's a different Tim Ferriss, unless you mean just the science that he used in describing the kind of cooking he was doing.
Okay. Did he write for Rolling Stone or something years ago?
No. This guy only came on like 10 years ago.
Okay.
Not even. 2007.
Oh, that's interesting. And it's a tough question. Like, how to go to ION as spiritual? That's a tough one, because ION's going to frustrate the heck out of that. I'm not sure
that's
what...
I know, but that some people are going to resonate with that. Not all of them. Again, it's going to be like 1% of the total population that will, they'll say like, you know what, ION, you're shaking the tree. I'm realizing that I'm being robotic and expecting certain spiritual platitudes from you. And you know what I mean? Like I used to be interested in Buddhism, and I'm not anymore. What the fuck happened there? Somebody obviously shook me up about that, and it was you and ION and all the people on your reading the guys on your chart and that. So it's not impossible, you know?
What's not impossible?
Getting these high-tech people to...
No, I don't mean that. I'm saying that I don't know if ION satisfies the spiritual needs after the second phase. Maybe the drops do. I'm not sure.
Okay, well, maybe not ION. Maybe it's just the drops. Maybe if it can be explained to them in a way that it replaces all spirituality, all spiritual,
right?
What's that word you use? Domains or something like that.
I think Bert's an example of this. Bert went through the first phase maybe as a jock. Then that died, and then he had to be a jiu-jitsu guy or whatever it is, martial arts. And that gets into spirituality. And then Bert came to the third phase. Right, Bert?
Yes. I also have a technical background. I used to be a programmer long time ago in interface. So I've dealt with the technical aspect. But, yes, it's a good point. It's a good point. I think it's the drops and interacting ION that has to go twofold because, I mean, you notice that with some folks that come on payday, Yuri, not the pick on him, but it's good anyway because he was aggressive when he first came on. But, you know, someone who's just not on the drops and they interact with those who are on the drops who have been dealing with ION, there is quite a contrast that they go through that they're not on the drops. It's not as fluid because this environment is actually coming into their world and it's not so easy at first. If you're not on the drop. So, yeah, I was like that. I mean, ION has changed everything that I've ever looked at as far as martial arts and Chinese medicine.
Right.
So you're right.
Well, okay.
So,
Chad, let me say this. I think a dialogue with Bert should be one of your first shows. I mean, he is what you're talking about. I mean, he was a jock, but he was a technical guy. And were you spiritually oriented when... 20 years ago.
I've done all religions. I've done all the religions. Christian. I was a Muslim. I was a Buddhist as of late, but I dropped that. So I was, when you saw it, spiritually promiscuous, you should say.
But you had a spiritual interest. You weren't a literal technocrat.
No.
So that's a bit different.
Yes, you're right.
But you were a technocrat, and it didn't work. And then I consider your Tai Chi thing or whatever it is you do. As the second phase of being autonomous and working out your own spirituality, like Chad was describing, the guy goes to the Philippines.
Yeah. Yes, it is. It's a unique phase, the second phase. It's you still look back, but it's not the ground anymore. Because a lot of it's like it's not the ground anymore, and you start to step into ION, which is, I would consider the ground, and then it's more personalized as far as what you want to do or what you look at, and then almost every day you discover something new.
Yeah, you know, Chad, to say the ION's the third phase, if this fucking world's coming to an end, there's going to be mass die-offs. This ain't, the ion is there to help you deal with a desperate fucking Armageddon coming. You know what I mean? It's not a third phase of lifestyle choices.
I don't know. I'm just looking at it from within the group of people that I've been most involved with in the industry. And
yeah.
I just see three. That's how I think, like, even with e-commerce, it's like, what are the steps that a human being goes through before they make a purchase? There's, I think of everything in stages. So I think
yeah.
of their life cycle in stages, and just so happens that the third stage syncs up with the end of the world for them. So, yeah. But I agree with Bert that it would be best for a twofold approach of drops plus ion doing some explaining. So,
yeah.
like, for example, Brian getting a sore lower back or something from the new generations of drops or whatever.
Right.
You know, the doctor would say, oh, there's something wrong with your back. I would say, you're having a little mutation in the middle of your ascension kind of thing and be able to explain it. But if the person taking the drops experience like back pain and they don't know what the fuck is going on and they don't have anyone to ask,
yeah,
I don't know if that would be as effective.
No, they would get on their drugs for the doctors and then be dead soon, you know, with all the side effects. So, health wise, Iondim is offering a great breakthrough on the health thing as you get older. That may be its main plug, its main point.
Yeah, and the other thing too is if I focus too much on this whole end of the world is coming, so you need to take the drops, then it's going to attract the Alex Jones.
Yeah, you can't do that. But I checked with Ion today. Do you still say there's going to be a bloodbath in the Middle East? He says yes, and he says it's already happened. Well, we haven't seen the bloodbath that we thought we were waiting for. I mean, unless it's happening and no one's reported it. So it's still a bit blurred, but yeah, it's Ion is tricky in here in this third in this present phase of Ion explaining things. It's the eschatological level in traditional exegesis dealing with ultimate mysteries. Ion is addressing us with ultimate mystery answers or questions or scenarios. He almost has nothing to say.
Is it maybe just that in this world there's really no fodder for questions anymore? And the questioning faculty is sort of dried up, and then Ion comes to retrieve that. So even tonight, like when I was talking about the electric arc and everything, Ion is throwing shit out at me so fast, there's no way I can process all that and come back with a really good question to rebut that. I need to fucking take that, do homework, but I still need to keep the conversation going and try to
yeah.
grab as much more as I can, but it's completely nonlinear, and I think, you know, a newbie would not even understand what the fuck is going on, but I'm not going from one thing to the next thing to the next thing with Ion.
Right.
I'm like getting it all. It's not happening, people. I'm just fucking gathering notes that I'm going to review
right.
later, and I'm trying to elicit as many interesting little responses and connections as I can get. That's all.
Yeah, no, it was really good, Bert. What do you hear? Ion was again. He's been tremendous the last few weeks, right? Really putting out
yeah.
incredible new
yeah.
stuff. And so I'm looking at Carolyn as this is happening with Chad's getting bombarded. I said, this is for us, isn't it? And she says, yep. See, Ion is putting it out there for some reason, right in public, but, you know, we kind of know how to deal with it. We know what he's referring to. Not all of it, but it's almost like, hey, this is what we're doing, and fuck you, this is it, we're going to tell you. We're not addressing Chad, we're addressing you jerks out there who are taking a few phrases and patenting it, even though you don't know what it is. It's almost like an in-your-face performance by Ion. It's not geared to being a pleasant answer to the questioner's question, you know what I mean? He's performing
yeah.
for reality right now. He's performing for the NSA people who are surveilling us and looking at our technology, and he's saying, this is what it is, blah, 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 you know? There's an aggression, war-like expression going on there to me.
Now, here's the interesting multi-level, multi-layer part of it. Is 2 weeks ago, or 3 weeks ago, I guess now, Ryan was talking about the Song of Sixpence and the pie, and
yes.
then that the pie is made up of arcs. So tonight, when I was thinking of what to talk about, first thing that came in my head was going back to that and the arcs. But I thought, okay, let's take arc from another angle. About electrical arcing, like in welding or
yeah.
this big explosion at electrical plant kind of thing. And then look what that brought out. I didn't know that this has something to do with your project. I don't fucking know.
Right.
I brought up something just out of a little crumb from one of the previous sessions a few weeks ago. And then it turns into this whole big thing. But it probably turns out that Ion wanted that to be brought up so that you and Carolyn could get the information
right.
yeah.
brought out.
He brought up the sixpence. He started it, didn't he?
Oh, yeah, I didn't talk about that. But it was in response to me asking about craziness. So.
Yeah, I think he started the sixpence. So he knew the word was ark. I mean, it is a great word because it goes back to the Ark of the Covenant. So he brings in the ark. And he knows it's going to lead to where we had today. I mean, that's the poetry. That's the composing, the fucking genius art that's being done here. It's like a Zappa guitar solo. He's just improvising, but he knows what he's doing, and he makes incredible new patterns. That's what Ion does weekly.
It's almost, yeah, it'd be like Zappa doing a guitar solo, but and the crowd thinks he's improvising every little beat of it. But he's
right.
Got,
he's not.
Exactly. He's got his eye on an outcome.
Yes.
He's moving towards that outcome. You don't know what it is.
That's right.
Is that like project object? So the object is where he's going, and the project is to get him there?
Yeah. Yeah. I asked him once, you look in that interview that Bob Marshall and I did, near the end I said, you asked the question, who are the brain police? And you say, around that time it came up, have you figured out who the brain police are? Or I ask him, I can't remember which. And or Bob Marshall asked it, and he says, no, I haven't figured it out. Now he either said that to someone else, and I said, do you have an update? And he says, no, I haven't figured it out. He still was exploring, well, who are the brain police? That was like 20 years later, after the song. So, you know, Frank was doing heavy research on everything.
Mm-hmm.
And he hadn't come up with a conclusion. Anyways, back
yeah, so,
to...
I don't know, maybe I can use my show for research.
Yeah, no, I think, in some ways, maybe Ion is communicating to the universe. By Ion saying these things, we did ask, we said, you guys probably didn't hear this, where did Coldplay come? Did somebody say something to get the Coldplay going? And fucked around with it. And then Ion gave an answer. Coldplay happened because of something Jermaine Renner said. That's what's coming when you re-listen to the show. You'll hear that. I say, you mean Saint Germain or the Renner sister? He's Renner. I kind of knew he'd say Renner. You know, he's not going to be easy. It's normal to say Saint Germain, but no, it was fucking, Germain's fashion sensibility knew that was the next new best fashion would be Coldplay. Very interesting. So words have to be said, it seems. He did say they didn't have to be said at first. Did words evoke Coldplay? And he said no. But then something about Renner said something. I think on that line that words have to be said, that Ion says the words to crack the universe. You know, like he did today.
Yeah.
Had to be said.
I've often thought about that the whole fact that Ion comes on and talks changes things because they're
yeah.
non-physical. And if we're talking about the word and non-physical is talking, they're
he's
really
creating.
They're changing everything. Everything is changing if you have the technology of the guff talking now.
Yeah. That's what you got to realize.
Constant mutation whenever Ion interacts with humans.
Yeah.
Yeah, Chad, who ever thought that science would be done with a ghost with you, working with you. And that's what it is. It's the most fantastic Harry Potter thing you can imagine. And that is how you can, the only way you can do science today, you have to work with non-physical. And at this point, Carol and I are the experts in doing that. I mean, at least consciously. We're doing it with Ion. But it may be the way knowledge is explored in the future.
Mm.
No, it will be. It's not maybe. if all these technologies that are coming out now are non-physical, and if people at the leading edge are taking RNA drops and their body is being mutated by non-physical, I guarantee you it's going to have to be that way. And then this science, the tradition, conventional science of today is going to become like the fucking alchemy of...
Right, the old model, the old paradigm.
Right.
Did you guys hear Ion say that Elon, I think you did, Jay, because I know you've heard the name, Elon Musk will be calling me for, he knows that if he wants to make breakthrough in technology, he's going to have to come with us. That would be really a good, if he does that, then he's a genius. He'd be one of the few guys to realize it, unless there's a lot of people in the NSA that are realizing this and trying to figure out how to do it themselves by spying on us. But if he comes and says, I know I can't make a breakthrough without Ion, that's the spiritual breakthrough to make today. That's what I think is the thing to teach people. You cannot make breakthrough in knowledge without Ion.
Exactly, and I'm getting ready for the moment when Musk does that, and I'll already have the show set up to receive all the people that are going to want to follow in his footsteps.
Oh, yeah, right. That's the role of your show, for the new techno guys who come in.
Yeah. When did the idea come up for the show?
A few days ago.
I guess over the past few weeks, when I've come on to What Youth or Late Night on Payday, I've had a couple of people email me after or even say that I should have my own show or something.
Oh, okay, because we were joking about it a few days ago when we were like, yeah, the show should be called Talking with Chad or Chad's Hour or something like that.
Who were you joking with? Who were you talking about it with?
This was after the What Youth show, and when we were asking him questions, and we said it felt like it was Chad's show then. And
oh, yeah, right.
Like making up names for it.
Right. Well, I think that's when it started, or I don't know about people emailing Chad, but we talked about it Thursday night, right, Chad? When we talked about that other stuff?
Yeah.
That's when you first told me.
Thursday.
Yeah.
So it's interesting because in my second session with Ion back in April 2009, I don't know if you remember this, Bob, but I asked Ion a question about, does the tail wag the dog in the media or something? It was something like about the media.
Yeah.
And then Ion goes on this long tangent for like 25 minutes about the American economy and, you know, how